I vowed that I will never use the expression the good old days. Never. But I will allow myself to say, remember the old days. Remember the old days when school didn't start until like the day after Labor Day? When it was a little more sane for kids, a little more predictable and easier on parents trying to figure out when their kids are in school and when they're not in school. You know, growing up, I don't recall having anything all that special happen during Labor Day. Oh, sure, there was the parade, but beyond that, I don't remember much of anything because, you see, I was too wrapped up thinking about having to go to school the day after Labor Day. I don't know what your remembrances of this day are. Maybe there were some traditions that were either part of your family. What were yours, Chris? You're shaking your head, yes.
Big old family reunion consisting of a whole pork, hog roast, and everybody bringing.
Family reunion and pork roast sounds like a good family to me. Are you doing that tomorrow, by the way? No. Oh, okay. I was going to say, we're all family here, you know. Anybody else have Labor Day traditions? Paula?
Yeah, my father used to take us up to Chicago. I was raised outside of Peoria.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we would go to Chicago to a
Chinese restaurant. Oh, okay. That's cool. You remember which one it was?
No,
one cat.
It was upstairs on the second floor. I remember when we went up there, my mother didn't know that we were going to go to that restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't tell her. So all I had was a swimming suit on and a shirt and a pair of shorts over that. I had no shoes because when we went up there, we just went barefoot. So my mom made me wear her size 9 high heels.
Well, I would love to have seen a picture of that.
I have a picture of me in the swimming pool.
I want the video.
I want the video. Yeah, a kid in high heels, that's be almost as precious as Brent in high heels. Any other Labor Day traditions that you and your community or family had?
Sure, I do.
Yeah, what was that?
I lived on a farm and we had to work all day, so it didn't matter.
Yeah. So your family, you totally lost sight of what Labor Day is supposed to be, a break.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else? I want to tell you about something that happened while we were driving through Minnesota on the way to our fishing trip last month. We saw something unusual. It was a divided highway, and over on the other side, there was a bunch of men wearing, you know, those bright chartreuse vests so that nobody would hit them when they're out on the road. And my son-in-law, RJ, says, "Now, you don't see that very often." And I said, "What's that?" He said, "Look at the sign. It said men working, and they were actually working. Every one of them with a shovel in their hand and the guys running the machinery. You don't see that much in Indiana. You ever notice that?" You know, I used to just give the benefit of the doubt. I'm driving along, and there are the highway construction workers, and they're standing around talking with one another, maybe leaning on a shovel or something, and I always said, "Well, this is their scheduled break time." And then I would drive by the same place later that afternoon, and they're in a different spot, but they're still leaning on their shovels, having a conversation, and it just seemed uncanny. Whenever I saw the men working sign, I saw men not working.
They weren't working. Talking.
Working, talking, okay. Yeah, and I concluded that men working sign ought to be changed to say men working on break. Now, obviously, these strong, deep-tanned, hard-hatted men have a very difficult job. Not only through the manual labor and working all of that heavy machinery, but have you ever stopped to think about the ire of hundreds, maybe thousands of motorists who are going by them, all upset because of the traffic congestion that these guys are creating? I must confess that I have glared now and then. But there have also been times when I said, boy, I wish I could have that job of being the guy holding the pole that says slow on one side and stop on the other. Just has the radio, talk to the person out on the other end. Now, please don't take this seriously, especially in case you have family members or you yourself were ever a highway construction worker. It's hard work, no doubt about it. This morning, I want to talk with you just a little bit about our work. And that is to say that we all have work to do. But work is something that is supposed to not be drudgery. Work at its best gives our lives meaning and purpose. Now, I'm aware of a lot of jobs I could never do. I could not be a neurosurgeon. First of all, I don't have near enough smarts to be able to do a job like that. But you ever stop to think that people who go through neurosurgery, that most of them don't make it? We have one notable exception here with Casey. But you know, if you want to be a part of the joy of medicine, you would be a pediatrician, because you're bringing life into the world, not a neurosurgeon. They're on the other end of it so often. No, I couldn't be a neurosurgeon. I couldn't be like my daughter Stephanie, who's an accountant. I like playing with words, not numbers. And I could not work for a septic tank cleaning service, for obvious reasons. But as the saying goes, it's hard work, but somebody's got to do it. We all need meaningful, purposeful work in our lives. We need to believe that what we do, whatever it is, has significance of some sort. And standing on a street corner, dressed like the Statue of Liberty, holding a sign that says, "We buy gold," is not what I mean by meaningful labor. Years ago, in Illinois, there was an all-state basketball player named Terry Ruger. These were the days before the NCAA had very stringent rules about recruiting. So Terry got a scholarship to play at Illinois Western University. But Terry came from a poor family, and the athletic department didn't have enough money in their account to take care of things, so the athletic department got Terry a job. And his title was Faculty Vehicle Superintendent. And someone asked him, "Well, what exactly do you do?" And he said, "Well, I walk by the faculty parking lot twice a day to make sure it's still there." A title without a task. That's a dangerous thing, isn't it? You probably know that from your history of work in whatever field that is. Nothing is more dangerous than a title without a task. And that's what Terry had. Title without task, a job without a job. And as you might suspect, Terry flunked out during the first semester and never returned. You know, whether you still get a paycheck every week or you have long since retired, I want you to know that as Christians, you still have a job to do. You still have work to contribute to the betterment of others. My dear friend Vaughn lives next door to a cardiologist. And he told Vaughn just a couple of weeks ago, he said, you know, if you want to live, keep working. Because he talked about all, especially the men in his practice who have worked most of their lives, who come to retirement and it just stops. And they don't have any idea what they're going to do with the rest of their lives. They don't have a plan. They just kind of wander around lost for a while. They sit and stare at the TV. They eat. They sleep. And this doctor said, you would be amazed at how many of my male patients are dead 1 year after retirement. So on Labor Day weekend, we want to take some time out for time in to ask ourselves, are we using up precious time watching ourselves age? Or are we living a life of service to God and others that makes a difference? And to help us in that question, we're going to look to the shortest book of the Bible. You know, the shortest verse of the Bible is Jesus wept. The shortest book of the Bible, or more correctly, the shortest letter is Philemon. A lot of people don't even know Philemon is there. They cross through it in their search for something else, but this is a fascinating letter. Philemon was a slave owner, and he had apparently a very warm relationship with the Apostle Paul. Paul had probably started a church in that area where Philemon lived, and maybe the church met in Philemon's home. Now, Philemon had a slave named Onesimus, and he ran away, as slaves in those days were wont to do. We don't know why he ran away, and we don't know why, but he found his way to Paul, who at the time was in prison. And Paul is writing to tell Philemon, okay, he's here with me, but you need to know what a wonderful man this guy really is. He said, while he has been with me, he has come to the faith, and now he wants to return to your household, Philemon. Of course, by law, he had to return, and runaway slaves were not dealt with kindly when they return. Now, today, we would look at a text like this and say, why didn't Paul say something about the sin of slavery? Then you have to remember that that was so ingrained into the culture. It was not regarded as a sin the way we would look at it. There were people who were once of means who were now poor, and what they would do, they would indenture themselves as slaves for a period of time until such that they were stable enough that they could be out on their own again. It wasn't all of slavery as we understand it, but it was just the custom of the day. Paul assumes it. But what wasn't customary is the relationship that Paul developed with Onesimus. He was affectionate to him. In fact, Paul had a soft spot in his heart for Onesimus. He wanted him to stay with him and perhaps be a part of his ministry, maybe to be a courier of his letters to the small churches that he had founded that were dispersed throughout Asia Minor. So Paul gave word to Onesimus to go back to Philemon. And so Paul writes this letter to Philemon to not welcome Onesimus. I'm having a problem. I'm thinking of other Greek gods and stuff. To welcome Onesimus, not as a fugitive slave, but as a fellow brother in Jesus Christ. Because what Paul was saying here was absolutely revolutionary and radical. He was basically telling Philemon that there is no longer a division and distinction between master and slave. That no longer applies because every person on the face of the earth is a child of God. Formerly, Onesimus' worth was only that as a servant of Philemon's family. That was it. And in his absence, Onesimus' life meant nothing. He was simply a runaway slave. He was simply a fugitive. But I want you to listen again to verse 7. Formerly he, that is, Onesimus, was useless to you, but now he is of use to both you and to me. He is no longer your slave, and you are no longer his master, because you are both members of this wondrous family of faith that God has created. Onesimus is now your brother. That was absolutely unheard of. There's another way of saying you are not defined any longer by what you do, but rather by who you are. You are more than just a title. I did not marry Sue because she is a law office administrator. Oh, I've always wanted to marry a law office administrator. If I could only find a law office administrator, then my life would be complete. Of course not. I married Sue because she is Sue. We are not our titles, people. You know, I read about an epitaph on a gravestone that is in some who knows where cemetery that read like this: Paul W. Watson, born a human being, died a grocer. Now, what kind of inscription do you want on your gravestone? Born a child of God, died a salesman. Born a daughter of God and died a beautician or a receptionist or maybe even an accountant? Well, I hope not, because we are so much more than what we do. And I've talked to so many people over the years who are concerned about a friend or a spouse who have come to that time of retirement and they walk away from the work and it's life is just this blank slate before them, and they don't know what to do with themselves because their lives have been defined by their work. And that is not how God intends it at all. Let me tell you about a vacation I took. I think this was back in the 80s. It had been a particularly long and difficult month, and I was so glad to hop into the car with all the fishing equipment, and yes, you go to the same place in Wisconsin. And I'm down at the boat, in the boathouse, getting things ready, and there's a fellow in the boat right next to me doing the same. And we're trading small talk about what are we going to be fishing for and how you're going to do it and all that stuff. And in the midst of that conversation, there is this pause, and he looks at me, And he says, "Are you a minister?" And, you know, that's the last thing I wanted to be asked. I was getting away from all of that. What is it about me that he looked at me and he asked, "Are you a minister?" And so I said, "Well, what if I said I did?" He said, "Well, I was just wondering, because were you at the St. Joe Medical Center in the intensive care unit about 3 months ago?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "My brother had open heart surgery. You were in the cubicle right next to him, so I just assumed you were his pastor." "Okay, by golly, you got that one right." It was a family from Winnemac, Indiana, that had come there, and I explained to this gentleman, "You know, I would really appreciate it if you not spread the word this week that I am a pastor." And he said, "I know exactly what you mean. You see that guy up there at the cabin?" I said, "Yeah, that's my priest. He told me the very same thing that you did." A serendipitous moment. The story gets even more interesting because 1 year later, I was at Memorial Hospital in South Bend. I had gone up to visit somebody who's getting prepped for surgery, and I sit in the waiting room, and who is sitting across from me but that same guy? And we sat down and we stared at one another. He said, "You're a minister, aren't you?" "Yeah," I said, "You're a fisherman from Winnemac, aren't you?" "Yeah, so my brother-in-law is having back surgery today." You know, life's fascinating, isn't it? In terms of all of those strange meetings that we have with people. It may come as a surprise to you, but you are not what you do. Anybody want to counter that? Say, "Well, yeah, maybe yes, I am." And, you know, for pastors, it's no different. Ministry is what I have been called by God and by the community of faith to do. I have dedicated my life to ministry. But last week, when I was at my 45th reunion, they did not look at David Bibby, the pastor. I was David Bibby, the classmate. I was David Bibby, the comedian. I was David Bibby, no, we won't get into that. But I was, thank you, Paul. I was David Bibby, the guy in the band. And you know how wonderful and freeing that was to go into an auditorium with 300 people and to just be yourself. But not just be yourself in terms of this one little entity. Not to be the self defined in terms of what you do, but to be defined in terms of being a child of God, and what a profound difference that makes in our lives. We got a holy roller here this morning, or what? Sometime this weekend, I ask you to take some time out for time in and realize that we all have work. You know, some of us are beyond the years of doing heavy manual labor, but we still have work to do. There was a lady in my first church who was a severe arthritic and who was always wanting to do something for people. And she found out that by saving postage stamps, she could get some money, which she included as a part of her offering. And she went about that job with the utmost seriousness and enjoyed it so much. It feels like I'm really contributing. And I said, that's because you really are. For some of you, that contributing means getting on the telephone and giving somebody a call that you know who's having a rough time or maybe hasn't been in church for a while. For some of you, like Ruth and Herb, that ministry is sitting by the bedside with Robin for hours and hours, knowing what a phenomenal difference that is making, not only for Robin, but for they themselves. That is work in its truest sense. And I hope that whatever it is that you do, that you don't approach it like I hear so many people doing. People who are satisfied with just good enough, or saying it's enough to just get by, but to do it with integrity, with a conscientious spirit, and with the realization that God can use you through it. And with that, I pronounce this sermon concluded.